Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, depending upon where you are in the world. Where I'm at is Miami, Florida, Doral, Florida, at the one of the offices and conference rooms of the Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Department Training Center. And with me, our special guest today is Lieutenant Will Garcia, who is going to explain what his job is as a probationary development officer. The topic is mentoring, and I think we all have strong opinions and passions about that. We have another special guest with us today, Kate Durnaker, and we're all just for us regulars, we're not going to do much of an introduction at all, just say your name, but like Kate and Will, take as much time as you want, because we have the time, and we don't worry about time constraints, and we run over. A couple of shout outs. I always like to mention my buddy Dave Hibben, that works for Key Hose. He was a glutton for punishment, captain of Engine 10 in Washington, D.C. If you know anything about the D.C. Fire Department, Dave has got a heck of a lot of experience, and now he represents Key Hose. And if you purchase Key Hose, you get a guy like Dave Hibben that comes to your department to assist you with flow tests and advice. And that advice is based on years and years of experience. So big shout out to Dave. And I also want to shout out, I was not going to be here today. I had an EMT refresher class. And it's like death and taxes on my department. You can't get out of it.
Okay.
But I want to give a shout out to the instructor. It was a mixed group of, I am one of the few non-paramedic BLS losers that's still on the fire department. So they mixed us in. So kind of like a fly in the punch bowl. So this instructor was really great. And here's how I feel about EMS, because I'm not in the field anymore. If you are not able and willing to render emergency aid for, say, a seizure, a heart attack, bleeding, anything, then don't ever wear a fire department hat or shirt, anything that identifies you as a firefighter when you're out in public, because you will be called to duty and it will be your duty on or off duty, whether you're in your jurisdiction or not. So I feel very strongly about that. And I wanted to give a shout out to this instructor. He was just absolutely a stellar guy and explained everything in terms of hose lines and friction loss. And as far as the cardiac system and the pump and the sprinkler heads and the piping, it made it very, very entertaining. So would you tell a little bit about yourself, what you're doing here, how you mentor?
Well, I've been on the department 18 years. I waited very late in my career, 15 years on, to become a lieutenant. And I wanted to do that because of the growth of this department. The amount of recruits and probationary firefighters that come out in a yearly basis is astonishing. So I became a recruit instructor initially. And as a recruit instructor, you do a little bit of mentoring, but obviously you're seen as an authority figure. So, you know, you can't mingle too much with the probies. But then after doing multiple classes, I decided to become a probationary development officer. As a probationary development officer, you are assigned to certain battalions. There's five of us right now. We got 14 battalions. I handle battalion 1, 2, and 3. Rotations for our probies is every 3 months. So every 3 months, the probie rotates from the north to the south, from A shift to B shift or C shift. So, and that's just so they get a taste of the difference in our department, from the south to drafting, to the north, to high-rise firefighting, things like that. Along the way, the backup that they have as a probie, and we're talking about personnel that have absolutely zero experience firefighting, is their PDO officer. So I'm assigned that probationary firefighter for the 3 months. That probationary firefighter knows that I'm with them 24/7. I mean, they could call us at any time. with any issues. And we follow them through. We also bring them back every 6 months to do a midterm and to do a physical assessment that we do. And they do that during their recruit. So once they become probationary firefighters, they do it at their midpoint, 6 months, and then they do it at their final year. And that's just an assessment, a physical assessment, so they know how quickly this job could catch up. You know, when you become, you know, either the training goes down, the sleep deprivation, all that. So, and that's just an assessment for them. Along with that, we also do a written test that they have to do at their midpoint and at their final. So within that year, we also bring them back quarterly to do any type of training. So we cover forward lay, inch and three quarter, supply line. We do it all. We do it all. And it's a lot of information. And you're talking about a probie that goes, depending on the holiday that they get into class, anywhere from 12 to 14 weeks is their SOP period. And then they go straight to a year of probation. And they're thrown out there, you know, and there's a lot. I mean, some of the stations that we choose for them are busy, busy stations. We're running averaging 15 to 20 calls a shift. So they're overwhelmed and overwhelmed with everything, not just the call volume, being put in a pressure position, you know, to what do I do in my downtime? How do I manage my day, you know, so that I'm busy, so that I don't look like. So it's a constant relationship that you build as a probationary officer with that probie. And it's great because since there's five probationary officers, and when they change every 3 months, they get a taste of the difference, you know, of experience. All of us are within over 10 years on. We have female, we have different, you know, nationalities. So it's great for them to experience the difference. Plus, we're all in different areas of the county. I've worked in the north my whole career, and we have other probationary development officers that have worked the south. So they get a little taste of that and more experience when they get to that area of the county. So it's always a mentoring. And it's funny that I'm gonna bring it up, but this Sunday we had a probationary firefighter whose house actually caught on fire. And, you know, he feels like, oh, my God, I have nothing. But the overwhelming support from the department, from the union, I mean, you want to talk about brotherhood. You know, he's really understanding what he's in, you know, and that's what we do as probationary development officers. We let them know, hey, we're here for you. You know, you're going to be overwhelmed. We understand that. As long as you do your duty, you report, you know, you stay good, you train. And if you have any questions, we're always going to be here for you to the end of your probationary year. And usually that you build a relationship with them long after that, where I get constantly calls like, hey, LT, I just bought my first house. You know, and things like that, because they feel an attachment because you're with them every single step of the way until they're out of probation. And then obviously once they're out of probation, it's a sign of relief that, oh, okay, I'm on permanent status. But it's exciting. It's exciting. And I love mentoring, you know, it's one of my favorite things to do here.
Kate is our other special guest. And it's the first time we've met. She's been writing fire EMS articles for Fire Engineering. So I figured that would be she would be perfect for this type of topic today, mentoring. Kate, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure, Bill. Thanks. Thanks for the invitation to be here today. My background goes all the way back to the early 70s when I got involved in sort of almost every aspect of emergency services. My first paid job was as a dispatcher. So happy Emergency Communicator Week to everybody. We love you. And then I worked as a paramedic in Denver for a number of years and search and rescue along the way, mountain search and rescue, and also search and rescue back in Michigan where I live now. And my latest rotation was as an EMT firefighter for a small town in Michigan for about 8 years. I'm retired now and all I do is medical death investigation is my final career path at the moment. But I have been writing for this industry since the 1970s and most recently with Fire Engineering. So I'm pleased to be aboard. My background on the topic of today on mentorship, I was thinking about a couple of angles I could talk about as a mentorship as a process that is I love what I'm hearing from you, Will, because it has a lot to do with training. It has a lot to do with bringing people along who are maybe at the front end of their career and really entering with just a blank slate. And to have good guidance from the get-go, to me, through a good mentor is something that everybody should have access to in this business, but it's unfortunately not so. I think that many of us know of people who tried it out and washed out because they just felt they didn't ever feel that come along, we'll teach you how to do this. They felt more like the judged all the time, or harshly maybe hazed, or back in the bad old days, you know, of some of the things that have gone on in this industry. So to have a good mentor, to have somebody that can lead you along, it's really a very formal relationship that in the best and most accurate circumstances is defined. I will be your mentor, you will be my mentee. This is what I'm agreeing to do, and this is what you need to agree to do for me. So it's a mutual agreement. There are roles that are offered up. And as the mentor, any department out there that's not doing this on their intake is missing great chances to bring people on board in a way that's going to keep them around. Because with so many people leaving the field, and maybe it's because they just didn't have someone to turn to when things got tough. And that's what a mentor does, is that mentor is there for them. I mean, this job is physical, it's emotional, it's behavioral, it's social. You know, and if you can't sort of work your way in all those various ways, it can be kind of tricky to feel successful, even despite the brotherhood. And I miss my brothers that I saw for so frequently, and I'm still in touch with, of course, all of them. But I'm also glad to see that it looks like that my way or the highway era hopefully has been diminished over time, and that better processes of bringing people on board are occurring. So I'll stop.
I agree with you, Kate. We talk about the good old days. Bravo Sierra, good old days. Those were the bad old days. Exactly. The hazing, the subordinating of people, mm-hmm. the intimidating of people, withholding information, ostracizing people based on race, gender, ethnicity.
Ethnicity,
false teeth, okay, ethnicity. All those were bad old days. Keep your mouth shut, rookie. Those are bad old days. These are the good old days. And we've got two classes running right now that when they leave and get out into the field, I will put these young people up against anybody. And thank God for the CPAT, which stands for what?
Candidate Physical Ability Test.
Because that is even the playing field, okay? Admittedly, we used to cut females slack and we had lower standards. Not anymore, and not in the last, almost 20 years now?
20 years, yeah. At least.
Yeah, they're all judged by the same standard, held to the same standard. Well, I'm going to ask one of my mentors, a wise old sage. And by the way, I feel very strongly that a mentor can be somebody that has less time on the job than you do, and can be younger. For instance, Jay Nunez, Tony Garcia. Okay. I was a captain when they came on the job. So, or at least a lieutenant. But one of my mentors is right there. This big guy with this walrus mustache, this Captain Mike Dugan. And God, we do solve the world's problems on the phone just about every week we talk. And so, Mike, what's your thoughts and feelings and experience with mentorship? And who's made a difference in your career?
I can't tell you the number of people who have made a difference in my career. My first captain, Danny Marshall, taught me how to be a fireman, taught me what was expected of me, not because of what he said, but because of what he did. He not only talked the talk, he walked the walk. And he always told me, I'm there for you, but you have to come talk to me. You have to ask me. If you're having a problem, you have to come see me. You have to be honest with me. He was my first captain. He taught me what to do. The senior men, when I was a fireman in 43 truck, taught me what they wanted me to do. Now, one of the things we've had a problem with in the fire service for many years is the unwritten rules for the probies. When I was a captain, I came into a great company, 123 truck, and they had the probie bill of rights, the probie's assignments for the day tour, for the night tour, what they expected of you, what they wanted you to do. It was spelled out. It was in a thing. You came in as a probie and they told you what they expect you to do. You signed it and the captain signed it with you. And they told you what they expected you to do. Vinnie Dunn was one of my mentors. He got my first article published for me. He always said to me, you know, you wrote this great thing for the FDNY. And the FDNY said, who the hell is this dumb kid who's a fireman? What does he know? They threw it in the waste paper basket. Vinnie Dunn read it as it went through the chain of command and said, can I get this published outside the job? Because sometimes you can't be a prophet in your own land. And he helped me. I can't tell you the number of people. John Salka, it goes on and on. Now, what I will tell you about mentorship that I love is when I was involved in the FDNY with the leadership programs in the FDNY, when you get promoted to lieutenant in the FDNY, you go to FLIPS, First Line Supervisors Training Program, and you do 6 weeks of school at FLIPS. And we always said, and the same thing at the captains, when you go to the captains, when you get promoted to captain, you do 4 weeks offline to get the leadership, to get your things down there. It's time for you to rework your network, because you and I are captains. We're going through the same program, exchange information, phone numbers. And we call it in the FDNY, phone a friend. If something's going on and you're scared, those people you know, those Vinnie Dunns, those Bill Gustins, those Jason Hovelmans, all of these guys, you call one of them and say, hey, listen, I got this problem. I'm in the firehouse. I don't know what the hell to do. What do you recommend? And these are people, a lot of times, who have been there before and have done this. These are your mentors. So your network has to include people who are in the same place you are. If you're a captain, and all your friends on the job are firefighters, you don't have another captain that you can go to, it's a problem for you. You have to have your network of like people and people above you that you can go to. Not saying you can't be friends with firefighters, don't take me wrong, but it's that we have to have a network of people in the same area who are dealing with the same things, with the issues of today. Listen, when you and I came up, Bill, there was no such thing as social media. Being social meant we sat down and talked. Now we text. Now we FaceTime. Now we do things. It's social media is unsocial. It's antisocial. But we have to get together. We have to sit down. One of my favorite things about being in the firehouse is we used to have chips, poker chips on the table. After the meal, the junior man had to pick a poker chip and they'd have a number on them. And it would be 10, 15, 20. Those were the number of minutes we have to sit. If we didn't get a run, we'd have to sit and talk. I gotta talk to Jason? Oh my God, what am I gonna say? Clark, I don't know. I gotta talk to Clark. I gotta ask him a question. I don't know. You know, Daryl and I have to discuss something. Oh my God. Okay, I gotta go see on my cell phone. You know, somebody might have updated Twitter today. Absolutely, cell phones are not allowed in the firehouse kitchen. Okay. Again, we have to get back to that brotherhood and that sisterhood. We have to get back to where we communicate to each other and where we get together. And our mentors have to be up, down, and on the same level that we are. And we have to have those people we can look to, because when things go wrong, those are the people who are going to bail you out and help you find your way.
And Dan Shaw, a name pops into my head, and I'm going to guess he has influenced you. Two names, Larry Schultz and Ricky Riley.
Yeah.
Would I be accurate in saying that they made an influence on your career?
100%. I mean, and that's the beauty of what we do, right? I mean, those guys, Ricky and I worked together as firefighters, and man, he was the guy who drove the ladder truck and I was the engine driver, and we were each other's necks every single day, which was fantastic. It kept us both honest and kept us both accountable. And that's the beauty of like what we're doing here. It's the beauty of what Sam and I get to do teaching together in traditions, is that it's the same circus, different clowns. Everyone's dealing with the same exact things. So to be able to have a network of people who who are not within your organization and don't live in a vacuum, that you can go have a frank, honest conversation with, and you know that they're dealing with the same exact things, and then be able to gain and learn from their experiences. I mean, just to, even this group we have here, from the size of our departments, you know, they span the globe, but we all deal with the same issues. It's just scalability. You know, some are going to be had to see this a lot, some that are often seeing it. And that's the beauty of it is, you know, a lot of times you don't even get to pick who your mentors are. I mean, it's nice when you have a formal process, but when you meet that person who just naturally does this because they're more invested about treating you who you are, not who you are right now, but who they think you could be, is tremendous. And I go back to, you know, when we had to write the acknowledgments for when Doug and I did our book, you know, you had to go back and think, who would you thank? And obviously you thank your family, which is, you know, tremendous. They're the support network. But 15, 20 years later, the only name kept coming back to my name was a guy named Andy Liebno, who works with Larry now, who's a firefighter in his department. But he was a paid firefighter in the place where I started volunteering in Howard County. And unbeknownst to me, at 16 years old, I didn't realize what he was doing. But I wanted to ride the rescue squad. They had a process with the volunteers. He said, no. He was a paid guy who was there 24 hours. And every evening, he'd tell me to be there at 1,900 hours. And from 1,900 hours until about 10 o'clock, we'd do one compartment on a rescue company. And he would make sure I knew everything soup to nuts about it, everything about the why, so I could develop a level of mastery. And this was a guy who was a paid firefighter who didn't have to do it. And he did it for a particular reason, because he had faith in who I was, invested all his knowledge into me. And that resonated with me. And he was the first guy when we had a class back up here that I tried to track down. And the irony of it was, is that he was at our class so he could bring his two sons, who now were in their late teens, to the class to hear from Doug and I. Unbeknownst to him, he didn't realize the impact he had on me. And that's, you know, it was a great moment, was to be able to go back to his sons and say, the reason I'm here is because of your father. It's because your father invested in me, that he showed me with this level of mastery that was expected. So, you know, even what we would think is a formal mentoring program is fantastic to have, but it's just the ability of an individual to be able to see someone and see that they can do some great stuff and get the best out of them and just invest time. I mean, you can't. There's no currency better than time when you invest time in people. And that's a great aspect of when we're talking about mentoring. And a lot of this one of these things that's sorely missing is like talent management. You know, how well do we do in talent management in the fire service? Of looking at individuals and saying, hey, you have the potential, I think, to be the next fire chief. What can we do to get you to this point? And some of that is because we've become a little gun-shy to discrimination or bias that, why do I do this? But no, I mean, it's good to recognize that certain people are going to be great at these certain things, and they have the ability to get to. Let's give them the tools, and not to deprive other people, but have some talent management. Because then what's going to happen, you get to the point of, hey, now the leader is going to leave because their time is up, and who's the next person? I don't know. We didn't prepare anyone for this. And that's always problematic, but you know, long winded, but yeah, no, absolutely. Those two guys, tremendous impact, still have a tremendous impact even to today.
You alluded to Doug and you alluded to your book.
Huh?
Would you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yeah.
You have no problem, shamelessly promoting Traditions Training. So I'm sure you can shamelessly promote 25 to Survive and our mutual friend, Doug Mitchell. But Doug's background.
Yeah. I mean, Doug's a perfect example. So he and I were volunteers together. We came up through the same system. We were separated by 2 months of coming into the volunteer department together. We both went to Fairfax. He will tell you that he was in the 89th recruit school. I was in the 90th recruit school. And then his dad was in the FDNY, and that was home for him. So he went back to the FDNY in 99, where he's at now. He's a captain in the FDNY. But he's my brother from another mother. I mean, even though we work in different places, I probably talk to him at least 3 to 4 times a week. I had the pleasure of teaching with him. And when we got the opportunity to write the book, neither one of us are authors by any stretch of the imagination. But we had recognized that there was systemic issues that were all related across the country regardless if you're paid, volunteer, large, small, it didn't matter, that were leading the line of duty desk in close calls. And there's a commonality to it. And unlike a lot of things we see in the fire service, and that was some of our frustration, is that when you know people will roll in and they'll write a report and they'll say, you did this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, and you should get 6 on a ladder truck. I can barely get 2. How about you give me something tangible that's a drill or an idea that I can do in my firehouse right now that might change that behavior, that I can get that to this point? And so we were given the great opportunity by fire engineering to take our class and put it into a book, because we're so passionate about the fact of if we really want to truly lead, end, or stop line of duty deaths, then let's identify the problem, then give you solutions. But the best part about it was it was an easy write, because you know both Doug and I think very alike. I mean, obviously he's from New York, so there's a lot of stories that probably are half true. And I'm a son of an English teacher, so it's like get to the point. But it was great to be able to write it with a great friend and a mentor.
Yeah. I know that. Kate, we just got to know you, but every one of you wonderful guys are my mentor. And we did have a hashtag there that you don't have to be an officer to be a mentor. Yeah, I've got, in fact, I highly recommend you go to YouTube and take a look at Gordon Graham's dissertation. It's about a 2-3 minute dissertation on the senior firefighter. The Senior Firefighter by Gordon Graham, and he gets it. And how you fit in, the role that the senior firefighter plays, and if you are that senior firefighter, the immense responsibility that you have if you want to do your job correctly. Sam Hiddle, are you your son's mentor now that he's a firefighter with Wichita?
I think you'd have to ask him. I think when it comes to mentoring, to get into semantics, you know, I think that it's important that departments assign people to help navigate the waters when you enter the organization. But me personally, I consider those people advisors. That's kind of more of a almost a formal management. You know, I'm going to tell you how to survive here. Whereas when I personally look at a mentor, it's an attribute that I went to them. I think as mentors, you can reach out to people, but ultimately to be mentored, the receiver has to go back to that individual and say, I want to emulate what you do. I want to emulate how you behave, or I want to understand tactics at the level that you do. And so that's where the relationship part begins. So to answer your question, I think you'd really have to ask him. I don't know if he sees me that way or not.
Well, I had a mentor, but it was my dad. And I'll give you 3 Bill Gustinisms. I said one day, Dad, I'm really tired of just reading about firefighting and tactics and building construction. I can't wait to get on a busy company on a Chicago fire department so I can put the books down and I can learn by experience. He says, wait a minute, young man, don't ever think that you'll go to enough fires for you to learn everything, learn why you burn out of your own experience. You have to learn from other people's experience. And then he said, and by the way, I'm trying to find, I have to use a euphemism here because I can't say the word he used. I know firefighters that go to 2 to 3 working fires a day, and they're some of the dumbest I know. Okay, we'll leave it at that. So we can censor that. Well, Sam, I do like that hair, that hat. And when you go back to your newspaper stand this afternoon, you got the right hat for the right job. We've got our brother over there, Chief Hovelman from America's Heartland. And what are your thoughts? And tell a little bit about yourself, and then what your thoughts are, experiences on mentoring.
Yeah, I'm in my 26th year as a career firefighter. I'm the fire chief in a career fire department in North St. Louis County. Volunteered for over 30 years. Started as a kid, and it's hard to add to what's been said already. But some things that I had thought about and written down is for us, And what I've found to be very valuable is kind of an informal approach to mentoring, in that it's a lot of times it's opportunistic between the mentor and mentee, meaning that there's a certain situation. For example, maybe I've got a battalion chief who's got like Dan said potential, and I take something from a book I read called Nine Lies About Work, and it takes potential. It makes you look at momentum because people who are eager and enthusiastic and are moving may not have as much potential as somebody, but they're working really hard. And so I may have somebody that's like that, and I may be dealing with a budget issue that's going to affect something 2 or 3 years down the road. And I can just tap that officer on the shoulder and say, hey, let me show you something. And we've been talking about this particular issue, and it is all levels of the organization. And here's how it might impact us in 3 years, and here's why. And it's those little moments that hopefully the intent, at least what I've been taught by many of you on this screen, is that the best mentors I've had make me ask a lot of questions and make me be inquisitive. And they don't always give me the answers. In fact, that's rare. They lead me to find the answers. In my opinion, it's hard to do that with a formal platform. Not that mentoring programs aren't great, but I find that those informal communications and those informal opportunities that just kind of pop up, and if you're not paying attention or don't have a little bit of thoughtfulness to the idea that, hey, I can offer this piece of information no matter how mundane it might seem. But from a tactical standpoint, for example, and some would call this training, some would call it a lot of things, but I kind of look at it as mentoring. I had a conversation with a brand new captain about a fire that got into the eaves of an exposure, and he was showing me pictures, and there were 2-bedroom windows on that side of the house. And I said, hey, just keep in mind, when you're hitting those E's, stay away from those windows. They're intact. And it was something he hadn't thought of before. And it's those opportunities to be able to pass along knowledge. And then the hope is that they come back and ask more questions and are more inquisitive and thoughtful about their own trajectory, and then keep feeding it, you know. And that's just kind of my take on it. And it's worked from the folks of you that are on here that are certainly mentors of mine. That's the process that's been very helpful to me. And I owe many and most of you a debt of gratitude for where I am today.
Well, that's great. Great. We're about at the halfway point. Just want to give a shout out to Key. That's keyhose.com. We have a buildings that are going in there for exclusivity, big word, 50 cents, please. They have very little hallway, if at all. In fact, we have some buildings, and I know that Captain Mike has buildings like this that have a very small footprint, but are very tall. And each floor encompasses a single unit, a single residence. Well, that gets to be problematic, because where are you going to lay your hose out? You have a very small landing. Are you going to have to lay it in the stairs? Whatever it is, you're going to have a space problem, and you're going to need hose with excellent kink resistance. And this is where the Key Combat Ready and the Key True ID. I say this on every one of these hangouts. Take the Key Challenge. Try your Combat Ready or Combat Sniper. The Combat Ready is 1.88. So it's bigger than 1¾". The Combat Sniper is it's a through the weave with the extrusion with a jacket for heat and abrasion resistance. But its happy space is about 160 gallons a minute, if that's what your department uses for target flow. And of course, it's a little bit more maneuverable and a little bit lighter. So I wanted to give a shout out to Key. And then here's a young guy that's a mentor to me. And Clark Lamping, how many medical calls have you run today in the absence of your rescue?
We've had 4 already, Cap. We have a, I don't know how this happened, but they're doing an Air National Guard drill in the 6th Battalion today, and out of 5 engines, we have 3 of them out of service participating in this drill. So the chances of me completing this Google chat are very, very slim. Thanks always for inviting me, and I appreciate all the kind comments, Cap, but absolutely, you're probably the most important person in my career. So I just want to thank you for that, as well as everyone else on this panel. I have a question for anyone who's listening and the people on the panel. We have a very formal mentorship program. Sounds very similar to what you guys have in Miami. Hang on.
This dispatch is for engine 38.
I'm out.
38.
Cardiac arrest. Anyway, what are we doing after the first year? On my job, we have a very sought out plan for the probationary firefighters after 1 year. I've noticed that second and third year, we tend to have a lull in training and motivation. So I just want to know, does anyone have a continual formal mentorship program after that first year? You guys talk about that. I'll catch you up on the recording. Clark. Take care, brothers. Thank you.
All right, brother. Take care. Stay safe. Clark and I discussed this the other day, and it is true that and we see it. Will and I see it, where we have good recruits. It's sad to see that we see new people that are in the best shape of their life, and then you don't see them for a while, and then a year later, they're fat. It should be you should be in better shape. I tell these recruits, you are receiving free training that you would have to pay hundreds of dollars for a 4-hour session. Yesterday we were cutting roofs, day before to run the rotary saw. Free, an exclusive gym membership. They're paying you to work out. I mean, you got it made. So we give you that gift of physical fitness. Don't blow it, for God's sake. You should be in better shape, the best shape of your life, and maintain that physical level of physical conditioning. Kate, I'd like to get back to you and discuss a little bit more about some of the issues that you have dealt with as far as yourself reaching out to people and people reaching out to you, primarily concerning some of the problems that come with delivering EMS. And I think Will said it very aptly that it's not just it's your whole life, because what happens in your personal life does affect your performance as a firefighter, a medic, an EMT. So, Kate, can you give us some examples of where you think somebody's made a difference for you, or where you've helped somebody else?
Well, thanks for that. And I have it on my mind a little bit, that post first year. Can I just make a quick comment there?
Sure.
Very few people who graduate from school ever read another book. Most people who earn a black belt think they have finished in their martial art training. And, you know, probationary, you get off probation in the fire service and you figure you're done. So what we need to do is alter that perception and help black belts understand that that only means that they are just beginners. They've finished being beginners. And if we could get that message across to probies as well, that you have only finished being a beginner, you're not really there yet, and you never will be. That might be one way to start. But in terms of reaching out in a delivery of, you know, just how to be in this business, whether it's the EMS side or fire EMS or straight fire, or for me, having been in a volunteer fire service situation where we were expected to be able to do all the jobs, depending on who showed up. On a given call, you might be driving, you might be running the pump panel, you might be first line in whatever. But I think that one of the reach out opportunities that I really feel strongly about is good communication. If we can, and I think my opportunities have largely come from writing and speaking to that, to various audiences over the years. I saw Bobby holding up a copy of my book. Thanks, Bobby. But you know, when we all get into our little bunkers in our minds of I'm a firefighter and that's what that means to me, without sort of reaching out to the people on the left and on the right, continually, then I think we lose opportunities to be the best teams that we can be. And it takes a little bit of leadership. Thanks, Bobby, there it is. It takes a lot of leadership to keep any team functioning well. And that begins with your probies and their mentoring. I think that having very specific processes through that first year or through probation, that needs to somehow translate into a further effort as you go forward. I know when I joined Ada Fire in Michigan, small town, 25 people on the roster. I came in obviously as a female and as an older person, so I had two hits against me. And I was a little nervous about that, but honestly, the reception was admirable. They didn't, I never felt othered. I felt like, here, this is the best way to get through this evolution. Here's some tips. Let me help you with how this is going to feel when you pull the handle on the hose and you get knocked back and someone's back hand was always on my back. So delivery of the skills that we have to do, whether it's EMS or fire, you know, it's not embedded naturally. You do have to learn them. And I love, you know, the idea that I saw it in the chat that, you know, you always want to look for that person who does it better than you do and drive yourself. But if you see someone on your team who's not driving themselves, who is fat after the, you know, 6 months after they come out of probation, there needs to be a mechanism for reaching out that's acceptable in the organization and non-threatening and non-judgmental, but which is indicating that you belong here and we want you here and you're not quite measuring up right now. So how that evolves in every team is a little different. But I think that's a lot about what we're talking about today.
Daryl Liggins in Oakland, California is a stranger in paradise because he is a career engine man. And today he is on a fire apparatus that bends in the middle. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Daryl, and what rig you're riding today? Stranger in paradise.
I think people that listen to this podcast know me. I'm Daryl Liggins. It's my 28th year in the fire service. I work in Oakland, California as a captain at Engine 13, which is we were the busiest single engine house. So we're going to ride that until we're not. They don't give you any extra pay for that. I'm working a mandatory overtime shift here at the neighboring firehouse, which is truck 6 and engine 18. So,
well, Daryl, if you get a fire, are you going to know what to do? Because you're not going to have a hose line. You're not going to be on a hose line.
Yeah, I'm going to be without water, which I don't like to be without water. I always want to be with water. The crew had an interesting fire this morning in a fallout shelter that was built in the 50s. In the fallout shelter, it was labeled one man and 12 women were to be in this fallout shelter. So very interesting district. We got a little bit of everything. So I don't know if I feel happy or sorry for that one man.
But hopefully I want to give a shout out. I think you call them hashtags. Kevin Storr. If that's the Kevin Storr, yeah, I know, the cranky old man from Houston that was originally from Illinois. And then I believe he was retired for Engine 8, I believe, in Houston. Quite a, you're shaking your head, Chief Holman, Kevin Storr. Do you know Kevin Storr? Well, Kevin Storr, if you're out there, bro, we wish you well. God bless you, man. And you're
let me do some high rise training with him. I got family. My wife's got family down there. And when I would go down, I would hook up with Kevin and do some high rise training and meet up with him and his company. Phenomenal fire officer.
Yeah. If you ever get a chance to attend a class talk or hands on by Kevin Storr, a retired captain from Houston, he was also I think he's still on his volunteer fire department. So, Will, now, can I ask you, what are some of the problems or issues that the probationary folks come up with? And what? How do you tune people up? I think we all know that.
Right. So I think the most difficult part of their probationary period, believe it or not, is the actual crews that they work with. So we've all, you know, we've all been firefighters for a while, and you could be in one crew and have a gun hole crew that's ready to drill at any point, ready to respond to the fire in a second. And then you have that other crew that's all day screaming and hollering about the one call that they just ran, you know, and unfortunately they pick up those habits. You know, and then we bring them out, like I said, to do various trainings. And the way we train with our probationary firefighters, it's standard across the board. So whatever they were taught in recruit training is what we go over again. Whether they learn more advanced techniques out in operations, but we have to set a standard so that we bring in probationary firefighters from all over the county, from the north, from the south, and they have to be able to do the same forward lay that everybody learns. Whether you learn the shortcut or not, we don't apply that shortcut. That's just experience that you put. And then at the end of that drill, we'll bring up, hey, did anybody else learn something new, something out in operations? And then we highlight that specific thing that they learned. So not, you know, remove them from learning extra things, but also to not give the probationary firefighters that aren't at those busy houses that factor of jealousy and why am I not there? You know, we have 150 rookies right now all over the county. And it's hard to get 150 rookies to learn everything at the same time and learn that level. It is impossible because, like I said, different units are, you know, teach different things. So the way we reprimand them is by bringing them out. And when they do the evaluation, we purposely will put a person from the south with a person from the north so that we could see what they're going to do. And typically somebody will do it different, you know, because either they forgot what they learned in recruit training, or they forgot what they just learned at that station, and then they mix it up. You know, it's the ones that just do what they're supposed to do that they learn in recruit training that outshine the other ones. But, you know, it's always a learning process.
I agree with Clark and Kate that when you achieve, you've made probation, you've graduated from the academy, or you got the lieutenant's mm-hmm. badge or captain's mm-hmm. bugles, it's just the beginning. And I think the best example of that is if you were to go to my station that mm-hmm. I retired out of when I went into the training mm-hmm. Division is Station 2. Mm-hmm. And these are veteran guys for the most part. And every afternoon in the heat of the Miami summer tropical heat, they're out and they are drilling really? And they've got hose on the ground and ladders up against that training tower. And these are experienced, highly skilled veteran firefighters that are never satisfied that it is just good enough.
Right.
And all three shifts are that way. Mm-hmm. And just an incredible bunch of guys. And I was so proud to be their captain for 1 month short of 30 years. Yes, sir.
I just want to say something about this mentoring that I think we have to hit on just a little bit.
Go ahead.
And I think that your company, my company, any company that's in there, the senior person of that company that's on that shift, a lot of times it's the apparatus operator, the driver, the chauffeur, whatever you want to call them, it doesn't matter. That person is a mentor, and he's mentoring the brand new officer who comes in, who's sitting next to him, who he's probably got more time on the job, or she's got more time on the job sitting in that chauffeur seat than that person becoming the new officer. But they're there and they mentor. And for our newly promoted captains, lieutenants, and our chiefs going into those other people in the battalion where they're coming in as a new person, don't forget, mentoring goes up. You mentor up, but it also goes back down. The people below you can mentor up, and make sure you talk to those people and find out. Because if you come into a new place, let's just say I come out of Midtown Manhattan in New York City, all high rise, huge buildings. I know standpipes. I know everything else. And then I go out to Queens and I get to an area with Queen Anne, Victorian style homes or private dwellings, total different animals. different where the people are going to go, different what my people are going to do. Until I know how they operate, I'm not going to know as a brand new officer working there what's going on. That mentorship is a two-way street, and it goes up and down the ranks. And we have to make sure that we enable that as officers, as chiefs, and the senior firefighter. You have to pass that knowledge on. If you know something and don't share it, nobody gets better. If you share it, we all get better.
You know, to dovetail with what Mike just threw out there, Marty Strauss out of a Brewer Fire Company in New York, volunteer fire company, they actually made that senior person a position with those exact responsibilities, Mike. So Marty shared that with me during the conversation, shot me a note, and really, that's brilliant, Bobby. Yeah, you don't have to have a, doesn't have to be a, you know, career job, volunteer job, doesn't matter. You know, Marty pointed out at Brewer Fire Company, that senior position does exactly what Mike just said, takes that institutional knowledge and makes sure, because who's closest to the new guy? That senior firefighter. And just a great piece of that mentor puzzle.
There's something.
And Dan, I did get the new book hot off the presses. So just kidding.
When we said
an inside joke with Dan and I, so I had to give him a hard time.
When it came around that we were going to be talking about mentorship, which is, you know, seems far off the topic of engine operations or truck operations, I decided let me look up this definition. And so to define it, it says an experienced person in a company, college, or school who trains and counsels new employees or students, which makes it sound like it's always got to be a supervisory type formal position. But one thing that it definitely lacks is what it takes to be a mentor, which has got to be approachable, non-judgmental, you know, kind, which isn't probably a word always used, you know, by a senior firefighter or something. And in Oakland, we don't have a formal mentorship program for probationaries or officers or battalion chiefs, except for when you promote to captain, you're supposed to mentor a lieutenant, which, you know, they tried to formalize that. And like we said earlier, there is a lot of problems trying to formalize mentorship. And I think when a lot of us are thinking about who are mentors to us, because we are all mentees, and that's that second road we were talking about. It's a two-way street. And I think most of the responsibility, I have not written a book, but so Kate, let me know if you disagree, but it seems like most of the responsibility falls on the mentee to be open-minded. And the mentee definition said to advise, to be advised, trained, or counseled. So when does that ever stop in your career? That never stops, that you want to be advised, trained, or counseled. And earlier, Mike mentioned, you know, he has many, many mentors. I think we would all not want to just start saying names, because we're going to leave somebody out, because there's so many names of people that have mentored us. But we have to always remain open-minded and realize that, I think Mike said, it's a network of people. And I would advise any mentee to think of it as a network, because like my father is, you know, one of my mentors, you know, or I wouldn't be in this job. He was a union man that was the vice president of a large grocery store union. He was a manager of a grocery store, knew how to manage a lot of people. But the other thing is not just think within the department. I get in touch with people from our electric company, an elevator company, you know, people in public works. There's people I seek to get information from on personnel issues. And that's not the same person I'm going to talk to about, you know, truck operations or union issues. And those people I seek to reach out to, they're always going to be somebody that's approachable and not going to judge me on whatever question I have, because I realize hey, you're the expert on this or subject matter expert, and that's why I'm seeking to you. And as far as being experienced, in my experience, it's been highly overrated because there, I think a lot of people would know the firehouse in my department if they were listening to this. I started at a firehouse where they were highly experienced. They were going to a lot of jobs. It was full of a lot of a-holes that they were not going to be able to pass on any of their experience because they were not approachable. Nobody really wanted to ask them any type of questions. But this next firehouse over, the one I happen to be sitting in right now, very approachable. You know, they didn't judge you on that. They wanted to learn. They took that opportunity to try and learn themselves and practice themselves and included themselves in the crew. So realize it's not all about experience, because if you can't pass on that experience, you're just withholding it for yourself.
You nailed something, Daryl. We've made relationships with the chief electrical inspector for the building department, the mechanical inspector that deals with smoke control systems and HVAC, people from water and sewer department about water mains, and a network of people that I can pick up a phone and they do the same for me. And these are highly experienced. It's their specialties that are outside the fire service, but they are pertinent to us. Although these guys are not firefighters, you know, it's not a good idea to always. I think that's some of the problems with cops. And they do this for a number of reasons, but you don't always want to hang around with the same people, with the same, because you won't grow. You won't grow if you just, you develop almost like a tribal type of mentality, where if you just hang around in a small cliquish group, you start to exclude things. Because the other thing is, another Bill Gustinism, my dad, is don't hang around with a bunch of idiots. Somebody made the comment, associate with people that are smarter than you, that will bring you up. All you folks bring me up and my kids in school. One of the reasons that they are so successful, my son and daughter are so successful, is that they were in the gifted program, all with the same kids from kindergarten all the way up through senior in high school. Same kids, and those kids were superstar students where their parents were really involved in their education. And to this day, they're lifelong friends.
Hey, so, Bill, I think you hit something on there that, again, everything's so cyclical in the fire service, right? I mean, very few times do we invent something new. And I go back to, and Bobby would appreciate you still on, but like the Stoics, right? You know, Seneca, all these famous Stoics, you know, talked all about this. And one of those quotes is really so, I think hits right to what we're talking about, is that man cannot learn something he thinks he already knows. And the important part of that is, like, what gets in the way of a lot of our people is egos. They can't remove the ego because this is their sole identity. I am the senior person. I have years of experience. You remove the ego, get the pride out of the way, you realize that everything we do in our job is about impact. No one cares about your number of accolades or awards when you leave. They care about the impact you have on others. And once you can be able to do that, you recognize you might learn something from that new person, but also, what do you have all this knowledge for? What are you going to do when you retire? Tell your wife? My wife could care less about what I do on my job. So you might as well invest in the people you lead every single day. And I think ultimately it comes down to, and I think Kate hit on this, it's about mastery, right? You know, we get to a level of mastery, and people so often confuse what mastery is mastery is a process. It's not the end point. And you were always looking to achieve mastery. That's like you get to the top of the mountain. You're like, I got here. And then the clouds part, you're like, ah, there's a summit up there. And it just keeps getting further and further away. But that's what we love about this. And the minute you can take the ego out of the equation, the better you will be. And you'll realize, like, hey, you know, you don't have to wait till you're the pinnacle of your career and go, okay, now I got to focus on what I can do. Because like we talk about leadership, it's not the number of people you leave in your wake. It's the number of people you're bringing with you. And that's, you know, one of the great honors I get as a deputy is I get to go around and give all the probies their black shields. So when they go from the red shield of probationary time to the black shield, I never give any of the probies their shield. I give them all the accolades, tell them it's a great achievement. I tell them, you know, really two things they have to do is you always have to be a student of this trade, never stop learning every single day. And two, the day the new probie walks in here, guess who they're coming to? They're coming to you. So while you think you don't have a lot to share, you have a lot to share. And then I give the shield to their master tech, which, you know, for us is the technician who's assigned to them. Their shift gives them their shield because their shift invested so much into them. And your hope is that, you know, that does imparts into them is that understanding is, hey, and now I'm part of this tribe. I have accountability. I have to be able to contribute. And we can't diminish that, right? I mean, it's so vitally important.
Oh, Dan, I think that's very profound. I couldn't agree more. Sam, any closing thoughts? We'll go on my screen. We'll go from Sam to Kate to Daryl, Mike, Chief Hovelman, and Will here. I don't know if the boss is still on, but Sam, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I would say in the fire service, because we're a paramilitary organization, one of the most difficult things of a formal mentoring program is how do you teach somebody fortitude? Because as a formal mentoring program, are you not going to tell them you need to listen to your officers, you need to listen to that senior private? And then they go out to a negative company or they go out to a company who thinks all things are common sense and they're conflicted. Because they've been told to emulate that company. They've been told to listen to their ideology. And so I think that that's where we lose a lot of our people, as opposed to that receiver or that person looking to be mentoring, going out and finding the people that they want.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Ed. And the best of luck to your son, who's on the job there in Wichita. And I know you've been burning it up out there. Kate, again, thanks very much for your willingness to come on and participate and bring things to the table. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I just think, thanks again for having me. I it's been a real pleasure to listen to everybody. I just think that when I started at the front of the hour, I was talking about the bad old days, and I do see progress over time that there have been improvements, but there still needs to be a process towards maintaining people as they get into that upper level to remember how it felt to be coming in and seeing those crusty guys and saying, I'm not going to be like that, and making sure they don't get there. And so that they can then turn around and look at the people coming up behind them in a way that we would have wished for if we didn't get that on our way up.
Thanks, Kate.
My pleasure.
Mike? Any closing thoughts, Captain Mike?
I just think, listen, mentoring is a great thing, and you should be a mentor. Everyone should be a mentor. We have a saying in the FDNY, every person is an example, some for the good, some for the bad. You can be a mentor. Do it, but you have to stay humble, okay? Whatever you do, whatever your accolade is, whatever your thing is in your job, there is somebody doing it better someplace else. Okay. So if you think you've arrived, retire, because you're only going to get yourself or somebody else hurt. Okay. It's all about staying teachable, staying alert, and staying alive. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks. Thanks, Mike. Chief Hovelman.
Yeah. Great conversation. And I think it's hard to add much to what's already been said. But I would just kind of echo that there has to be some purposefulness from the mentor to recognize moments that are teachable, that you can share those things. And you can only do that if you do have that humility and the thoughtfulness that you're still learning. Again, I think one of the biggest things I've learned from those that have mentored me, mostly informally, is the inquisitiveness and the listening and the questions that they guide the mentee to what they're looking for. And so that's one thing I would add. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure meeting and listening to Kate. I've already forgotten his name. I apologize. That's what happens when you get put behind a desk.
Sam Hiddle, that's his name.
Daryl, my brother, are you working a full 24?
Full 24, yep. Even though we changed the 48-96 schedule about a year ago, maybe 2 years now.
I don't know how you guys do it in a busy house. That's, you know, I could do that as a young man, but for 48 hours with no sleep, that's tough, man.
Yeah,
so anyway, hey, very insightful. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, just a couple things. As one is, if somebody's asking you questions or trying to get advice from you, at that moment in time, maybe formally they're not thinking about it, but they're looking upon you because they feel like you have some type of special knowledge. At that point in time, you are a mentor or advisor or something to that person. So respect that's what they're looking for. So some people are looking at these probationaries as fresh meat and, you know, gonna beat them to death for everything that they don't know. That needs to go away, you know, or you're not going to be able to pass on any of your knowledge, as I said before. But for everybody else out there, I think we've said it, but just remain open-minded and realize that there's a lot of resources out there to seek out any information that you're looking for. And it doesn't have to be your own organization. It could be another department. Some of my mentors are, you know, over here in San Francisco next to us, or even in some of the suburban departments. And they don't have to be from a busy firefighting place for whatever you're looking for. There's a lot of knowledgeable people out there. So that's about
it. Captain,
what would you like to say, Sam? Go ahead, brother.
I would just like to say, and this kind of ties a lot of this together. A lot of people complain about the youth. They're not loyal to the department. They're not loyal to the company like our parents were. But they are loyal to people. And so it goes back to, if you do take that time to invest in them and teach them something that's valuable, something that benefits them, and then they start to reflect what's important to you, then you can ultimately make them loyal to the department as well by proxy. And I think that's overlooked when we complain about the youth. I actually think it's a tremendous asset or an ability to reach them directly to make them useful to the organization.
Sam, I got to add to that. I 100% agree with you. When I hear somebody blaming issues on new people will do whatever you want them to do. They want to just know what to do. They will join the Marines and get shot running up a hill with people getting shot around them. They fight our wars. New people are great. We just have to make sure that we let them know what is expected of them.
Bobby Halton said I attended one of his classes in Fort Lauderdale. He says, we criticize millennials. Who do you think that is? The landing signal officer on an aircraft carrier guiding in that F-18 Hornet. It's a millennial, for God's sake. So, and I know that these young folks here in this academy are better firefighters now and probably better people. Definitely my kids are better people than I was at their age. So it's, I think we're painting with a very big broad brush. Did we cover everybody? Did we give everybody final thought? Dan, anything final?
No, everyone hit it, man.
Shout out to Key. That's keyhose.com. Take the Key Challenge. You can't kink Key. Take a look at your response district. Ask yourself on every EMS run, whenever you're out, how would we get a line in here? And also, where are we going to stretch and charge this hose before we enter the fire area? And if you don't predicate everything on just three lengths of hose, when you could take five or six lengths of hose, depending upon the distance of stairways and that type of thing. So think about that. And if you have a tight spot, hose like Key is going to give you your best bang for the buck, because you can't kink it. You can coil it if that's what you have to do. Okay, senor.
That's great. Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me on. And it was a pleasure meeting everybody here. A lot of respect for everybody that's on the board. I would like to close with just one small thing. So at 5 years as a firefighter, I started to feel comfortable about the job. Almost felt like I had enough calls that I was good. Nobody comes and tells you, oh, by the way, you're the senior guy. Oh, by the way, you're the mentor of that probie. You know, I think the hardest part is figuring out on your own that, well, it's me, you know. You're in a drill and they ask around, anybody got something to say? And you want to say something, but you're like, no, I feel like I'm the junior guy. Well, be that guy or that gal that's going to say something, because nobody chooses who's going to be the mentor. You know, you understand that I got a duty. I'm going to share everything that I've learned, you know, with the experience that I've gained in units and calls, and I need to share that information. I think that's the hardest part of being a mentor, is not being chosen as a mentor. It's you have to come out willing to teach and learn. Not everybody could do it. I'm going to be honest. I've worked around a lot of great instructors, but I've also worked around some instructors who are like, maybe you shouldn't teach, you know. But again, I think that's the biggest thing, is knowing when it's your turn and stepping up to that plate, because every single firefighter that leaves that station is going to appreciate whatever it is that you added after that drill or in the meeting. But thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
Till next month, God bless. Keep you safe. Keep you healthy. And for God's sake, keep healthy. And don't let your guard down. Okay. We're starting to see the reduction somewhat of the virus. Now is not the time to be complacent by any means. So I know that when we get finished with our dissertation, I have an official Miami-Dade fire rescue mask, and I can go in the grocery store with this mask on, because I now know that if somebody has a heart attack, I just had my CPR training and I'll be able to do it. So thank you, and God bless everybody. We'll see you next month.